job, to schlag up the Rebbe, to make it very hard for him and to get as much as they can. So you should get as much as you can, Be'ezrat Hashem, Rabotai. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Rabbi Javahari, and that was, I especially appreciate the Rav Schachter invitation as part of the introduction. So what we do each year, well, first of all, again, I always forget to ask, what is our timing?
10 o'clock
is Arvit. So we'll finish. 10:05 is Arvit, okay. So, is that like officially it's 10 o'clock, but we're on Sephardi time, so it actually starts?
Officially 10:05, but we don't tell anybody, we wait 1 minute for the people who have to say Kaddish to get upstairs.
Ah, okay. Very good. Okay, I may have to leave before that, but okay. So I actually was very, very moved because both Rabbi Javahari and someone else reached out to me in advance of me coming tonight and said that that there are a couple of people in the room that likely will have heard whatever shiur you want to give tonight, which is very moving to me that there are some people that listen to a lot of the shiurim, but it's also very challenging because it means that I cannot reuse a shiur that I've given in the past. So these are brand new topics, haven't yet discussed. That's not entirely true. I'm going to share with you two shailas that came up. One of them came up today. The other one came up about a week ago. One of them relates to a topic that I've discussed in the past, but more Marim Makomos came to light since I discussed it. And the other one is a topic I don't think I've ever discussed in the past. So we'll take a vote which one you want to talk about, and that will be the one that we talk about. Okay, so it's up to you what we discuss within the range of these two questions that came up. So question number one that came up is, I have a Talmud that reached out to me today and told me that whenever he fasts, he gets terrible, terrible migraines, horrible migraine headaches. So anyone have that problem? You get migraines? Anybody? So apparently when you get bad migraine headaches, there are all these remedies that you take, first of all, to deal with it, but also in advance of the migraine, to preempt the migraine, and therefore, when you know that it's going to be coming on, you can take something, you can take a pill in advance, and it will prevent it from coming on, whether they work or they don't work, but that's not the issue. The point is the person believes that they work, which likely means that for him it works. It's what they call the placebo effect, right? So whether it works or not, for this fellow, it works. So he wanted to know that with Tisha B'Av coming up, and Tisha B'Av falling out on a Sunday this year, if he's allowed to take his migraine pills on Shabbat, I'm going to say Shabbos just because I'm going to mess up anyway, so I'm just going to stick with Ashkenazis, as I told a Sparta crowd that I was speaking to recently, that when I start trying to switch between Ashkenazis and Sfardit, I end up sounding like an idiot, or as we call it, an idiot. So I'm just going to stick with Ashkenazis. The person wanted to know, is he allowed to take the pill on Shabbos? Now, what's the problem with taking the pill on Shabbos? Is that, first of all, one is not supposed to take medication on Shabbos. And second of all, you're not supposed to do anything on Shabbos that's going to prepare you for the rest of the week. There's an Isra of Hachana from Kodesh to Chol. So this question, or some variation of it, I've gotten, without exaggeration, beligusma, probably more than a dozen times over the past two or three days. More than a dozen times. Most people, it's not because of migraines. Anyone know what it is? Why would people take pills? Right, these caffeine pills, these Tzomkal, there's a kolel in Toronto. You know about this? There's a kolel in Toronto that they learn Torah 364 days a year, and on Tisha B'Av, I don't know if this is what they actually do on Tisha B'Av, but their other contribution to society is that they made or invented some sort of Tzomkal pill that gets marketed and sold in all your local kosher supermarkets. And all the proceeds go to the Kollel of Toronto. So whether the pill works for you or not, at least you're supporting Torah, because you're supporting the pill that they're selling. So everybody wants to know whether you're allowed to take this pill. Now, I have an amazing Talmud who reached out to me a couple of weeks ago and sent me a link to a shiur that I gave about 4 years ago about this topic of taking a Tzomkal pill on Shabbos for Tisha B'Av the following day, and he said, I feel like you want this in your queue. You know, you want this queued up for you because you're going to get to Shiloh this way. You could just, so I'm sending you the link so that you can just quickly forward it to people, which was very, very helpful. It saved me so much time. I was able to just go and forward that same link to so many people. But like I said, more information has come to light since I gave that shiur. So that is Shiloh number one. Are you allowed to take such a pill on Shabbos? Shiloh number two, I got a question from a fellow that davens in my shul who's a mechanech, and he writes as follows. He works in an elementary school or a middle school, and he writes as follows. I'm not going to say the name of the restaurant, but he names a restaurant, a pizza place. That's as much information as I'll give. A kosher pizza restaurant in the New York area. So we've now narrowed it down to, 1,000 places. So this kosher pizza place is running the following promotion over the summer. And he sent me a flyer for the promotion. And a friend of mine invited me to come down and watch him compete in this professional eating contest, right? It says, the flyer says, all summer long, extreme, challenge, right? So he said, firstly, does this sound like something that a Ben Torah should be discouraged from partaking in? And is this something that a kashrus agency should step in and stop? I'd be curious to hear what you think. Thank you. And then a few minutes later, he forwarded me. He said, this is the original text I got from my friend. And it reads as follows. I'm competing in a pizza eating contest at such and such store, at such and such place, tomorrow night, and again in a couple of weeks. Fans are welcome to join, and don't have to eat. Leave that to the wannabe part-time competitive eater. Tomorrow, Wednesday, I'm teaming up with a friend to finish a 24-inch pie in 20 minutes at 7:15 p.m. A few other friends are joining to cheer us on as well. If we win, we get the pizza free and a $75 gift certificate. Which is stunning to me, because that means if they don't win, they have to pay for that pizza that they just stuffed down their throat and practically killed themselves over. Okay, then, in two or so weeks, presuming we are still alive, he didn't write that, I added that in, we'll be doing the individual challenge, which is much harder, and I'll hopefully be finishing the entire 24-inch pie, the size of around 17.25 to 17.5 regular slices, by myself in 45 minutes. He invited all of his friends to cheer him on as he defies the laws of humanity and tries to consume this massive amount, 17 and a half slices in a span. I had pizza tonight because you guys are allowed. Were you allowed? You guys are allowed to eat meat? What? No meat? No. You got the whole 9 days? Oh, really? Okay. So anyway, I had pizza tonight, I guess, like you. Two slices, and I already feel like that was way too much. 17 and a half slices for this fellow. So the question is there anything wrong with doing this? Is there anything wrong with watching this and cheering this on? So that is Shiloh number two. Okay, so those are our two Shilohs. So normally I give an option of three, but we're sticking with two tonight. So again, Shiloh number one is the fellow with the migraines. Is he allowed to take the preemptive migraine pill, or for anybody else, are they permitted to take a Tzom Kal on Shabbos in advance of Tisha B'Av? And Shiloh number two, question number two, is one allowed to partake of this pizza eating challenge or cheer on a friend who is participating in this pizza eating challenge? I don't think this was a 9-day challenge. This flyer says all summer long. So this extends throughout the summer. Okay, so by a show of hands, so first think about which one you want to vote for. By a show of hands, all those who want to talk about the Tzom Kal or migraine pill. All those who want to talk about the pizza eating challenge. It looks like pizza eating is gonna be it. Okay, so maybe we'll. All right. Like I said, the other one I already have a shiur on, and I'm sure there's a lot written on it already. By Rav Rimon wrote a tshuva just last week about it too. to a friend of mine, to Rav Shai Shechter, who had asked him this shayla. But okay, so let's discuss the pizza eating challenge. So what's the problem? Meaning, you know, I have a friend who's a Rebbe in yeshiva, one of the Rashi yeshiva in our yeshiva, Rav Ezra Schwartz, who used to tell people that a good question to ask on a first date when you go out with a girl, if you really want to get a sense of a person's hashkafa, of what their worldview is that you can ask them, do you view everything in the world as mutter until it's proven usser? Or is everything usser until it's proven mutter? Meaning, what's your worldview? Do you view that everything is forbidden unless you can show me somewhere that it says that it's permissible? Or is no, everything's permissible unless you can show me that that something is prohibited? So what's the right answer? Really, everything's mutter unless there's an isser, right? Without an isser, everything is going to be mutter. So we're going to have to be able to identify an avera if we want to say that something. To just flippantly say, I don't like it, and because I don't like it, then it must be usser, it must be problematic. That's not the way we operate. You have to be able to identify what exactly is the problem. So if we want to identify a problem with a pizza eating contest where someone is going to eat 17 and a half slices in 45 minutes, so we have to identify what exactly is the problem. So anything? Achil gasa. What's the issue of achil gasa? Okay, that you're eating like an animal. Is there a lo sase in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to overeat? Meaning, what's the aveira to over? I agree. It is definitely achila gasa. Achila gasa is a halachic concept that it's lo shmei achila, that it's not even called achila. The Gemara talks about this in Maseches Yoma, that if a person does achila gasa on Yom Kippur, it could be that he didn't violate achila. You know, when you come into Kol Nidre to the beginning of Yom Kippur, you come in and you've just stuffed your, you've just eaten this big su'udah right before Yom Kippur, and you're about to. So if you right then, right as Yom Kippur starts, if you were to take, you know, a pie of pizza and try to eat it at that point in time, it could be that would not be a Yom Kippur violation on a D'oraisa level, right? Because at that point, you have no interest in food. You're disgusted by the thought of food. You don't know. So at that point, that's achila gasa. Achila gasa is lo shmei achila. That it's not called an actual achila. It's not called, it's not considered that you're actually eating. But is it usher to do? Is it a problem to do an achila gasa? What's the isser to do an achila gasa? Oh, shmartem mevod nafshel seichem. What about a person has to protect their health? You're not supposed to do things that are unhealthy. So that's one issue, one problem. Anything else? What's that? Baltashkes, meaning that you are baltashkes of what? What do you? What? Of your body, right? You are destroying yourself. You are laying ruin to your body. Is it baltashkes of the pizza? Maybe, right? Meaning you're ruining this pizza for no good reason, because it's not helping you. It's not. Yeah, someone. Yeah. What's that? Going in the ways of the Goyim, Chukas HaGoyim. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Meaning, where did we get this? Where did this store, where did this pizza shop get this idea from? Joey Chestnut, right? I mean, this is July 4th, Nathan's, although Nathan's is, even though it's not a kosher hot dog, I think it was started by a Jew, right? But okay, so whoever, but still, the July 4th thing, you've seen that guy, right? You know, that they I saw a statistic somewhere about the all-time hot dog eating champion before Joey Chestnut was this Japanese guy, and before him, it was like way, way less. It was like someone was able to eat, I don't know, like 10 hot dogs in the 10 minutes a day. And then this guy came along, and all of a sudden he was able to eat 50 or something, like some crazy number. And then Joey Chestnut, and then they kept on one-upping it. So what did they chap? What did they realize that they could do that they hadn't realized before? So one thing is they dip the buns in water. Because you have to eat with the buns if you're having a hot dog eating contest. So one is to dip the buns in water, makes them go down. And the other is what they call the Solomon method, named after Shlomo HaMelech. If you listen closely, you can hear Shlomo HaMelech turning over in his grave every time they say it. But named after Shlomo HaMelech, the Solomon method involves breaking the hot dog in half before eating it. Because apparently you could just shoot it right down your throat if you break it in half, whereas you might have to chew if you don't break it in half. So that really changed the rules of the game. So why is that called the Solomon method? to cut the baby in half, right? Shlomo HaMelech was the one that came up with the idea of saying cut the baby in half. So, so how many Averos did we already identify? I lost count. Any, are there any others? Ah, so meaning Navel Berushas HaTorah assumes that it's Berushas HaTorah, right? Meaning it would be a violation of Kedoshim Tiyu if all else fails, then we know we have a backup. In our back pocket, we could pull out Kedoshim Tiyu because we know that this doesn't seem to be aligned with the Kedusha, with the holiness that a Jew is supposed to live their life. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to touch upon a number of different areas of halacha, and you came up with almost all of the ones that I was thinking of. I thought of maybe three more. Did anyone say Bal Tishaktu? You said Bal Tashchis. What's Bal Tishaktu? Don't be gross. Don't be disgusting. Don't do something that is absolutely disgusting. I remember an old friend of mine had done something when we were in high school that he later regretted, as high school students sometimes do things that they later regret. And it wasn't something that was particularly rebellious, but it was particularly disgusting. And I'm not going to say what it was. But whatever it was. But I remember when he was looking for a shidduch, a potential mate, a potential young lady, had heard about what this fellow had done in high school. Now, mind you, at this point, he was a wonderful Ben Torah. He's all the good qualities, sweet and sensitive and kind and nice. And the girl heard about that which this fellow had done. She said, look, if he had done something rebellious, if he was behind school smoking pot or whatever, that's fine. You know, like, as long as he's not doing that anymore. But this is, and I quote, she said, this is just, GROS is gross. And I just can't mentally get past it. There is an isser not to be gross. There's an isser not to be disgusting. So perhaps this would fall in that category. Did anyone mention Kavod HaBrios? There's a concept called Kavod HaBrios. What's Kavod HaBrios? That to be, it's more than being a mensch, it's human dignity. That, which I guess someone was alluding to before, we were talking about not to be an animal, but there's a concept that actually overrides halachos called Kavod HaBrios. Someone did mention Chukos HaGoyim, someone did mention healthy eating. Oh, there's another one. Moshav Leitzim, I didn't even think of that one. That's a good one. Okay, good. Is this a Moshav Leitzim? Probably you can't have a bigger Moshav Leitzim than this. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a bigger Moshav Leitzim than this. Lo Sasuru, why? I don't think anyone has a taiva to eat 17 and a half slices of pizza. If he does, then he's got bigger problems. There is another concept called bizoy ochlin, where you're not supposed to do things that are to diminish food. We have to show respect for food. We have to show a certain level of respect for the food that we eat. I have nieces who have a home-run business where they bake cakes, very fancy and nice and delicious cakes for people. It's not under my hashgacha or any hashgacha. People buy if they trust them, and they don't buy if they don't trust them. Just because they're my nieces, not my hashgacha, I take no responsibility, although their stuff is delicious. So they bake cakes. And much of their business comes from what they call, I think it's called a cake smash. Familiar with this? Anyone know what this is? No? No one knows? So what they do is, for a one-year-old birthday, they take the kid, they take the child, they take off all the child's clothing except for the diaper, and they put the child in front of a cake and see what happens. They try to make it as messy a cake as possible. They hire a photographer like Rabbi Javahari, and the kid comes and he smashes and he gets everything all over his body and his face and everything, and they have the most adorable pictures. So the cake is nothing but a prop for the child to destroy. So they weren't sure should they be feeding into the, you know, should they be providing for such a thing? there is a real serious concept called Bizo Yochlin. So maybe let's take a few minutes on each of these concepts so that we can understand them more fully. So it's obvious where we're going to conclude on whether this is a good idea or a bad idea in terms of competitive eating, and is that a Jewish practice or not a Jewish practice. But it will help us along the way to understand a lot of these halachic principles. Let's start with the Yisra of Bal Tashchis. The Yisra in the Torah is Lo Sashchis Es Eitza Ki Mimenu Tochal Va'Oso Lo Tichros Ki Adam Eitza Sada Levami Penach Matzor. That the Jewish people are told that when you conquer a city, you're not allowed to destroy the trees of that city, the fruit trees in that city. And that is a halacha midar raisa, it's a pasuk in the Torah, that a tree that bears fruit, if you have a tree that can grow fruit, you're not allowed to chop down a tree that can grow fruit. Sefer HaChinuch writes, Kemo kei nichnas tachazeh, halav shalo lasos shum hefzit. Tachazeh halav shalo lasos shum hefzit. He says, similar to this, it's not only, this losase in the Torah of not cutting down a tree is not only about cutting down trees. It's not to do anything that is destructive. Kigon, and he gives examples. Lisrof, a lekroa beged, to burn or tear clothing. I once had a shaila. There was this anti-Semitic fellow who made very popular sneakers. He was he attached his name. He was a musician or something, and he attached his name to sneakers. And everyone paid a lot of money for the sneakers. So there were some, you know, nice wealthy kids from the five towns who had five pairs of Yeezys in their closet. And then the guy who made the sneakers started, you know, pledging his allegiance to Hitler and saying all these horrible, horrible things about Jewish people. So they wanted to know: are they allowed to burn their sneakers? Right, of course, that their parents paid for. But are they allowed to? Are they allowed to burn their sneakers? So, if it weren't for that reason, it would be obvious you're not allowed to do that. If you just have something that's perfectly useful and you just decide to burn or destroy clothing, that's an isser, says the Sefer HaChinuch. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do destructive things. O l'shaber kli levatala, or just to break things for no reason. O b'chol inyanim eilu b'chol kayotzebam sheyeh b'hem hashchasa shu kedei hashchasa, and anything that involves any sort of destructive act is included in this isser. Why? Why are we not allowed to do this? So the Sefer HaChinuch, one of the beautiful things about the Sefer HaChinuch is he doesn't only tell us what the mitzvos are, what we have to do and what we're not allowed to do. And you know what does he also do? He gives tameh mitzvos. He gives us why. He gives us the reason for the mitzvos as well. And he calls them the shoresh of the mitzvah, mishroshei mitzvah. So he says, the reason for this mitzvah is, shu kedei lelamin nafshenu le'ehov hatov v'atoeles lidabek bo. Such words to live by. To love that which is good and beneficial and attach yourself to that. It's such an important hashkafa that a person in life should try to think about what is actually productive, what is helpful. If we spend, you know, a lot of times, especially in the summertime, a lot of people have a lot of time off. And, you know, you could look back at a whole day where maybe you didn't do a single aveira. Maybe you didn't do anything wrong during that day. But you look back and say, did I do that which is Tov, that which is toeles, that which is good, that which is productive? Did I help anybody today? Did I make myself a better person? Did I make the world a better place today? Right? When we have to assess our lives after 120 years, we have to assess, did we live up to what we were supposed to? So much of the ways people normally define success doesn't even depend on us, it depends on the situation that God put us in. The only thing that we can really define for ourselves is the world better because I was in it? Are the people that I encountered better because I was in their lives? Did I do something that was productive, that was helpful, that was beneficial? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's what this mitzvah teaches us. We should love goodness and things that benefit us, attach ourselves to that. V'zehu derech ha-chasidim va'anshei ma'aseh. Ohavim shalom, we love peace. Usmechem b'tov abrios, and we're happy when people are successful. Umekarbonos on the Torah, and we want to bring people closer to the Torah because we want them to be successful. V'lo ye'avdu afilu gargar shel chardal bi'olam, and we don't want to see anything go to waste, even a tiny mustard seed. Nothing should go to waste. V'lo kein harishayim acheim shel mazikin smechem b'ashchasas olam v'hemam ashchisim, not like the wicked people that destroy things. things and are happy with destruction. We want good things. We don't want bad things to happen. So that is this mitzvah. The Rambam in Perek Vav Halach Yud of Hilchos Melachim describes the Isra of Bal Tashchis as applying not to wasting but to destroying things. He says, Ma'aved ma'acholos derech hashchasa. To ruin food in a destructive way. I don't know, when I was a kid, I was always told, don't throw out any food because it's baltashkes, to throw out food, right? So why is it baltashkes? Because when you throw something in the garbage can, so you are you're destroying it, you're ruining it. Now there is a machlokas whether that's an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan, whether baltashkes are non-food, are non trees, meaning on doing any other form of destruction other than cutting down a tree, is that an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan? But everyone agrees that it's asur. The Gemara says it's asur. The Gemara says in Maseches Bava Kamma that if a person, let's say, Rachmana Litzlan, a person loses a relative, so what's the first thing one does when they hear about the loss of a close relative, of one of the seven close relatives? They tear kriya, exactly. They tear their clothing. So the Gemara says, Hakorea almeis yoser midai. If a person tears more than they're supposed to, meaning more clothing than they're supposed to tear, then it's a violation of baltashkes. You're supposed to do the mitzvah, that's not baltashkes. That's not destructive. I get the question every year before Pesach. People say, to throw out all this chametz, it's such baltashkes. And what's the answer? No, it's not. That's the mitzvah. That's called biur chametz. That's the mitzvah. But absent the mitzvah, you're not allowed to be destructive. You're not allowed to destroy things. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein writes that he's pretty sure that stuffing yourself with food is a violation of baltashkes, and he has a raya from a Gemara. The Gemara in Yoma that we mentioned before tells us, Am Reish Lakish, ha'ochal achila gasa b'yom ha'kipurim pater. If someone eats beyond what they can tolerate, on Yom Kippur, meaning beyond what they would be hungry to eat, when they're already stuffed and they're eating more anyway, then they're pater, it's not a violation midoraisa. And the Gemara makes a drasha, asher lo tu'unexiv prat lemazik, that if you're eating in a way that's damaging, then it's going to be, then it's not called achila. And Rashi on the spot says, l'zeh she'enu mevatel men shum ino yaldi achila zu, ela mazikhu es ha'ochlin ve'es atzmo. That through this eating, he's ruining the food, because now it's not usable for anybody else. And this, says Rashi, ve'es atzmo. What does that mean? He's ruining himself. Meaning, the Gemara, in a different context, has an expression called baltashkes degufa adif. The Gemara talks about in Maseches Shabbos, if a person has an option to eat two types of food, they'll both fill them up, they'll both be a perfectly good dinner. One of them is a high quality food, one of them is a low quality food. So the Gemara says, if you can tolerate the lower quality food and you eat the higher quality food, so then you violate baltashkes. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Why is that baltashkes? Baltashkes de gufa adif. When you eat the lower quality food, you're probably eating something that's not so healthy for you. And if you're eating something that's not so healthy for you, in a certain way, you're destroying your body. Meaning there's a baltashkes on your body. Right? Imagine someone comes to you and gives you a dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts, or from Krispy Kreme, or whatever. Right? So each donut is how many calories? I don't know, anyone look at those? They have to, by law, they have to post it, right? How many calories in a donut? So the ones with the hole in the middle, so they have less calories because it's missing all those calories in the middle, right? The ones with the hole in the middle, let's say 350 calories. The ones without the hole in the middle, with the stuff in the middle, right, is like 700 calories, right? So someone gives you a dozen donuts. So you can have the caloric intake that they recommend for a human being to have in 4 days by eating one box of donuts. But you don't have anyone to share it with. So you eat one donut, you eat two donuts. Then you say, but it's baltashkes. I can't throw away the other 10 donuts. If I throw away the other, there's no one that wants it. You know, everyone, all my friends only eat Chalav Yisrael and the Dunkin' Donuts and not Chalav Yisrael. So what? It's baltashkes. It's baltashkes. So what's the answer? It's baltashkes to eat it. Why is it baltashkes to eat it? It's the worst baltashkes. You can either destroy the donut or destroy yourself! Don't destroy yourself! Destroying yourself is a much worse form of baltashkes.
Is this only applied to donuts, or just regular dinner
also? So the truth is, on a certain level, it applies to all overeating, right? Meaning whenever a person eats in an unhealthy way, But it's you can't really identify an act of Baal Tashchus when it comes to regular eating in the normal way. But when you're talking about someone who does a very abnormal mugzam type of this exaggerated form of eating, so then it's much easier to point to that and say it's Baal Tashchus. So okay, second issue we said we would talk about is what's called bizoy ochlin, someone who disrespects food. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos tells us Arba Dvarim Nemru B'Pas. There are four dinim about bread. One of them is Ve'ein Zorkin Esapas. You're not supposed to throw bread. Why are you not supposed to throw bread? Because it's disrespectful. You have to respect bread, and it's disrespectful to throw bread. The Gemara then tells a story. I'm not going to get into the details of it. But it seems that you can never throw bread. When it comes to other food, though, the Gemara seems to say, you're allowed to throw it as long as it won't get ruined. So I don't know what Sephardic minhag is, but in my shul, when there is a chassan in the shul, before the Shabbos, before his wedding, he gets an aliyah, and people throw candies at him. Or there's a bar mitzvah boy, people throw candies at him. How are you allowed to do that? It's bizoy ochlin. How can you throw food at somebody? So the Gemara seems to say, well, the candies are these little sun-kissed fruit gems, and that's what we recommend, because our Ezra's Nashim is very high up, and the harder candies are likely to wound somebody. So like these little sun-kissed fruit gems, and they're soft, and they're individually packaged. So they're not going to get ruined when you throw them. They'll be perfectly fine. And that's why the kids all scurry to pick them up and to be able to stuff their pockets with them and to bring them home and to eat them. Right? So that's what the Gemara seems to say. But bread, even if it's not going to get ruined, you're not supposed to throw bread. Because why is that? Because bread is considered to be the most important of all foods. And the Mishnah Berurah writes this way, that even if it's not nimas, even if it doesn't become disgusting, you're not supposed to ruin bread. You're not supposed to do something that's disrespectful to bread. I don't want to get too much into the details because we're going to run out of time on that, but let's just suffice it to say that I would imagine that doing this to a pie of pizza, destroying this pie, and certainly in the hot dog eating contest, using the dip and stuff method of dipping the buns into water. Why don't you normally dip your hot dog buns into water? Because it's disgusting. It's disgusting. It's soggy and gross. No one would ever do that. If you want your hot dog buns to taste better, what do? You put them on the grill. You dry them out a little bit. You make them a little toasty, right? But to make them soft and gross, that's disgusting. That's absolutely prohibited to do with bread, particularly with bread. Probably with any food, but particularly with bread. What about a third issue, healthy eating? So let me read you the words of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos Perek Dalet. Hol ve'ayos haguf bari v'shalem midarkei Hashem hu, sherei i'efsher sheyavino yeda dover miyedias haborei v'hu chole. Since keeping a healthy body is the way of someone who goes with God, is the way of someone who dedicates himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because having a healthy body, if a person does not, Rachman Litzlan, does not have a healthy body, or a person is ill, it is very difficult to understand the ways of God and to dedicate his mind to focus on what he's supposed to understand about Hashem. Lefichach, therefore, tzarich laharchik adam atzmo midvar mama abdin es aguf. One must distance himself from things that ruin his body. Ulahanig atzmo bidvarim hamavrin v'amalchimim. And we should instead engage with things that make us healthy and that make us strong. And the first thing the Rambam says, v'yeluhein, these are the bits of advice they have. Li'olam lo yochal adam elek shurav lo yishta elek shutzame. Don't eat if you're not hungry. Don't drink if you're not thirsty. Listen to your body. If your body says it's hungry, then eat. If it's not hungry, don't eat. And then he goes on, and don't hold in when you have to go to the bathroom and things of that nature. The Ritva says that a person should not eat any unhealthy food, and the Sefer HaChinuch explains that you're not allowed to cause any danger to yourself because you have a nefesh that resides within your body, and when you ruin your body, you're ruining the nefesh that's inside of it. You're not giving it the ability to shine and to succeed. How many Yisurim did we discuss? So we discussed Baal Tashchus, we discussed Bizoy Ochlin, and we discussed healthy eating. That a person has to eat healthy. Number four, Baal Teshaktzu. A Question?
So,
okay, so it's a good question, meaning do you have to only eat the most... I just confessed to you earlier that I had pizza for dinner. Pizza's not the healthiest food. Why didn't I have a salad for dinner? Okay, I had a salad for lunch. Okay, but why are we ever allowed to eat anything unhealthy? So the poskim say because you have to draw the line somewhere. So whatever is considered a normal way of eating, we're okay with. To eat the right amount, in moderation, and anything, even candies, the poskim say, that if you eat a candy, one candy is not gonna hurt you. If you eat tons and tons of candy, it's gonna hurt you. So it's not, there's no isser to give a candy to a child or something like that. So that whatever is a normal way to eat is considered by society to be a normal way to eat. We assume, I don't know if it's whether we assume Shomer Pesayim Hashem, that Hashem watches over the fools and will take care of us anyway, or just because there has to be, you know, there's always going to be someone that will tell you, but you could do healthier. You know, there's something, why are you eating that? That's only whole grain flour, but you shouldn't have grains. You should be gluten-free. And why, you know, and you shouldn't have dairy. And you should, there's always someone that will tell you that something is healthier. So whatever society considers a normal way of eating, but it's a good question. The question's better than the answer. Yeah.
Why are you still like vaping?
Say that what?
Vaping.
I don't know. You have to ask them. The truth is probably because vaping is not as dangerous as smoking, and smoking is often the alternative for people. People who are addicted to nicotine a lot of times need to have... So smoking is even worse, meaning with actual smoke. The only downside to the fact... I mean, there are several downsides to the fact that they developed this thing called vaping. First of all, a lot of people who never would have smoked would vape because they're not going to get caught as easily because they don't. Not everything they own will reek like smoke, right? So they won't get caught as easily. It's less socially offensive when you're vaping than when you're smoking, so that's unfortunate. The positive is that for someone who's trying to who's already addicted to nicotine and can't give it up, it may be better. We don't know yet fully because it has been around long enough, but it seems that it's not as bad for you as smoking is. So at least that. I always, when I used to go to weddings, we have a minhag that the Gemara says that you're supposed to put ashes on the head of the chassan in the place where he puts on tefillin, on the makom tefillin, right where the hairline ends. I used to have a hairline. So you're supposed to put ashes on his head right there. So I used to go to weddings, and I didn't have to bring ashes because I would just go to the kitchen where the waiters were, and I would say, anyone have a cigarette? And there was always someone that had a cigarette, and I would light it, and that's how I got my ashes. And I would, but with vaping, like, no one has cigarettes. They're all pulling out their vapes. So what's that going to do for me? Again, like, pour vape juice on the house. So that's an unfortunate, result of the baby. Okay, what about Bal Tishaktu? So the Gemara in Maseches Makos tells us that one is not supposed to, when they have to go to the bathroom, you're not supposed to hold it in, because that's a violation of Bal Tishaktu. The Gemara says, if a person is Shasi Bekarno Du Umna, if he drinks using utensils that were used for bloodletting, can you imagine going into a lab where they have blood samples and pouring out a blood sample and pouring yourself a tall beverage from that, and drinking. It's disgusting. That's awful. So the Gemara says you're not supposed to do things that are disgusting. Now, technically, the Isra of Lo Tishaktu in the Torah really is about eating insects. So you're not supposed to eat that which crawls on the ground. But this is a secondary violation of Bal Tishaktu. And therefore, we assume that anything that involves doing something that is disgusting, including an eating contest, I would think would violate Bal Tishaktu. Right, because that was not considered disgusting. Meaning, if that was considered, meaning some people would say eating tongue is disgusting because I don't want to taste the food that tastes me back, or whatever. So, but the Gemara considered it to be a very great delicacy to eat tongue. I enjoy tongue also, right? So it's a wonderful delicacy. So a lot of it is societal, but I think even society, the part of the excitement of watching, let's say, the Nathan's July 4th contest is that it's disgusting, meaning people like watching disgusting things. There used to be a television show, I think it was called Fear Factor or something like that, where they would have people do disgusting things. And I remember, I only know about this, not because I watched television. I watched television when I was younger, but not when this was on. I wasn't so, but because I was in camp, they wanted to do a night activity called Fear Factor, where they would ask the children to do disgusting things. And I thought that that's not right. I don't think they should, I didn't think they should, I'm not the camp rabbi, but I didn't think that was right. I don't think they should be doing that. Every time I try to be relevant by saying television, I'm always off. But Rav Reuven Feinstein came to visit Camp Cayley this summer, and he was talking to the guys. Rav Reuven is, I don't know, he must be in his high 80s already, and he's the son of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It was a big deal. He came to camp, and he was trying to relate to younger people. So at one point he said, imagine you have a guy that, and he turns to him and says, what do they call that football game again, that big game? He said, the Super Bowl. He goes, oh yeah, the Super Bowl. that was the most inspiring thing. He didn't even know what the Super Bowl was. He forgot the name of the Super Bowl. So I hope all my failures in knowing things that I'm supposed to know are equally inspiring. So there is this Bal Teshaktzu. Then there's a separate issur called, another din called Kavod Abrios, which I wanted to mention. And that is a din in the Torah, a din in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that let's say someone is Motzei Klayim V'Bigdo. A person is walking in the street and they realize that they're wearing shatnez. Right? They look at their jacket and they say, oh, 50% wool, 50% linen. Right, it says right there on the tag, and he doesn't have one of those shatnez checking things. He says, what do I do? So Gemara says, poshta afilu b'shuk, take off your suit, even in the public market. So you'll walk around in your underwear the rest of the day. But what do you mean? That's a violation of kavod abrios. That takes away your dignity. So the Gemara says, my taima in chachma vein tfuna vein etzel l'neged Hashem. Kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem in cholkin kavod l'rav. When there's chilul Hashem, then we forget about the kavod of the individual. So then the Gemara goes on to say, but if the label doesn't say shatnez, it says shatnez mi derabanan. Right? Somehow you only have they were very honest in their marketing, and it says, don't worry, this is only shatnez mi derabanan, not shatnez mi d'oraisa. Then you leave your suit on, actively violating an issur derabanan as every moment you continue to wear that suit. Why? Because kavod abrios is docha every issur derabanan. Kavod Abrios is apparently important enough that it overrides Yisurim Derabanan. Now, if it's important enough to override Yisurim Derabanan, then it must be kind of important. And for a person to just completely give up on their human dignity in a way that they're going to attack food like an animal, right, that would seem to be a violation on some level of Kavod Abrios. The Gemara Baba Kama even goes so far as to say that the difference between when you pay four times the amount or five times the amount, when you steal an animal and you shecht it or sell it, right? So what do you pay? You pay four times if what the animal you stole was an ox, and four times for a sheep, and five times for an ox. Why four times for a sheep? Why less for the sheep? Because you've already humiliated yourself by carrying the sheep. So the Gemara says, because Kavod Abrios, you've already paid the price a little bit because of the Kavod Abrios. The Gemara Maseches Shavuos says that Haitzur Merabanan Diyada Besadusa Vezil Be Milsa Lemezil Be Dina Dezuta Minei Lasude Kamei Lo Lezil. That if you have a Talmud Chacham who knows edus, he knows testimony to say for somebody, but the court that that he was summoned to is a court that's beneath him. They're not as great as he is. That's a lack of kavod abrios. He doesn't have to go to testify unless it's about an isser, about dinei mamonos. He doesn't have to go. And then probably the final isser. Well, yeah, probably the final isser involved in these eating contests is the issur of chukas agayim. That the Maharik defines chukas agayim as anything that there's no tam for, anything that there's no reason, because you always have to be choshesh, it originates in avodah zarah, or the way we define it in Shulchan Aruch, anything that involves pritzos. So pritzos doesn't just mean improper dress. It means that you act in a way that breaks boundaries, that we live lives where we have certain confines we're supposed to live in. Pritzos means that we are poritz geder. We break those boundaries. There's a boundary, right? I think two slices is the normal amount of slices for a person to eat. A person eats 17 and a half slices. He's poritz some sort of boundary along the way between one and 17 and a half slices. So l'chora, that is a violation of chukas hagayim as well. Now, what about watching it? Is there a problem with watching it? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva and a letter he has in his Igros Hashkafa, where he talks about not being in a place where others are doing an aveira to watch them and to give an audience for them. That when you just like when someone is doing a mitzvah, there's a concept of Barov Am Hadras Melech, that the more people are there to watch it and to experience it and to be together, right, the more honor it gives to the mitzvah. You have the same thing with Averos. That the more people are watching the Avera and paying attention to the Avera, giving attention to the Avera, the more it magnifies the Avera. So to be a person who's going to provide an audience for those who are not doing the right thing is something that's not proper. And there are other side issues as well. You know, that technically one is supposed to leave over a little bit of bread. You're not supposed to, there's what they call the tainus harayvit. You're supposed to leave over a little bit of bread at the end. You're not supposed to finish every last morsel of food to show that you're ben adam. You're not an animal. What I'm trying to draw from that is, if the concept of Kavod Abrios is strong enough that you're allowed to violate actual averos in the interest of maintaining your dignity, so all the more so when there's no counter pressure. When it's just maintaining your dignity or not maintaining your dignity, you're obvious, meaning when there's a counter pressure that you have to violate an Avera to maintain your dignity. We say, good, violate the Avera, but just maintain your dignity. When you don't have to violate an Avera to maintain your dignity, then of course you have to maintain your dignity. That's what I think it is.
When one is watching progress, not necessarily an Avera, or you're watching...
It's an interesting question. To what extent non-Jews are obligated in Midos, and just behaving nicely. And it could very well be that non-Jew, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, where he believes in the non-Jews are also obligated in midos tovos, to practice proper behavior. I think this would fit in that category. I don't think Joey Chestnut was doing any great mitzvah.
You watch it after?
maybe. I don't know why you would want to, but maybe. If it, really? Wow. Okay. That tshuva, he says, you know, he doesn't really come up with a formal issur. He says, just when he talks about hunting, the Nadav Yehuda says, think about who the hunters were in Tanakh. The hunters were Esav, Nimrod, meaning these are not the heroes. So the Tanakh is trying to tell us something. It's trying to tell us that that's not something that we should strive for. Sometimes, you know, someone once asked me, he had a client in Texas, and he went out to go visit the client, so he was trying to drum up business for whatever business he was in. And, you know, just like if you come to New York, they take you out to a deli or a steakhouse or something. You go to Texas, they take you out hunting. You know, you go in some places, they'll take you in Florida, they'll take you golfing. In Texas, they take you hunting. So he wanted to know if he's allowed to go. Is it a problem for him to go hunting? So I said, don't worry, you're not going to hit anything. Your first time, there's no chance you're gonna kill anything. So I think you're okay. Just try not to kill yourself. So I didn't think that was, but considering that it was a business situation, I thought. Okay, so I guess we'll stop here. Everyone have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for letting.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.